DW Africa Link.
Liberia intends to accept up to 1,200 persons to be transferred from the United States of America.
Being deported to a country you've never even visited. That must be frustrating, don't you think? Well, that's exactly what has happened to 20 people sent from the US to Liberia. Let me explain. They were told to leave America and ended up in a country most of them had never seen before. And this is just the beginning. Liberia has agreed to take up to 1,200 of them, making it the biggest deportation deal the Trump administration has struck anywhere in Africa. So why did Liberia say yes? And what's the price of saying yes to Washington? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Mica Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter. Reports suggest that most of the 20 migrants deported from the US into Liberia were mostly Cuban and Venezuelan. Liberia calls them, quote, guests of the Republic. Rights groups call it something else entirely and are questioning the legitimacy of such deals. Basically, Washington is leaning on a rarely used law that allows deportation to a third country when sending someone home is, quote, impracticable, inadvisable, or impossible. Does that make it legal, or is there more to this? Let's bring in political analyst and geopolitical expert Fidel Amachi Owusu. I also have DW's Evelyn Pade in Monrovia, Liberia. Welcome both of you to the Africa Link podcast. Evelyn, take us back to the day that 20 migrants arrived in Liberia. Who actually got off that plane and how did it go?
Thank you so much, Eddie. Thanks for having me. So that day I was at the airport and initially the government had announced that the flight was due around 11 o'clock in the morning. Journalists were posted after a couple of minutes, just almost a minute, so 11 o'clock. Then they came back to say, oh, it's going to be at 1 o'clock. However, journalists did not leave. So initially, we were expecting the 20. When the flight landed, we were then told that no recording, no journalists allowed, everybody step away. It became very tough. So one after the other, the people on board were, you know, disembarking the flight in a very unusual way. Like when one person comes down before the other person comes down, and it was like that. It was confirmed officially from the Minister of Information that it was 15 people who entered Liberia or who are in care of the Liberian government.
And also we are hearing reports that some of them refused to get off the plane. What actually happened? What do you know?
So what we know is that we stood from a distance and could not count by ourselves whether they were 20. And trying to verify from the government of what we heard from other inside sources that five refused to disembark the flight, the minister has said that, well, all we can tell you is 15 came. So where the other five went, it is up to you, the media, to ask the American government or the American where the other five went. So when I asked him, but minister, we understood that there were 20 and the five declined to come. We in other wired that they were flown to Equatorial Guinea. Can you clarify or verify this for me? And he was like, well, it is up to you, go to and ask the American government what happened to the other five. So that's what we can say for now. There were 15 in Liberia currently, and the other five is up to the U.S. according to the government response.
Yeah, you're right. Reports suggest that others ended up in Equatorial Guinea instead of Liberia. But as you say, Evelyn, it's not clear the right information from the government. Before I go to Fidel, Evelyn, do we know where those that have arrived in Liberia are? Where are they being kept? Who are they? Does the media or do journalists have access to them?
And so the Liberian government, to be honest, they have not officially disclosed accommodation details, aside from just saying, yes, they are here. In terms of which company is even in charge of all of these logistics, accommodation, they have not said so. And even at the press conference yesterday, the minister also withheld the names of the company, the two companies. He only mentioned there are two companies. But footages and even the movement of the vehicle that took the deportees from the airport went towards the direction and into the fence of a private business lodging company known as Creed Lodge, right? But that is something we have not independently verified as DW Africa, but we know we saw vehicle driving in there. The government is still like withholding back on a couple of details, like who are these people, you know, how many of them are from what country. So in terms of food, accommodation, where they would be, they have not openly said that.
Right. Fidel, this just sounds fishy almost. I mean, what do you make of all of this sort of confusion? What's going on?
Yes. So thank you very much, Eddie, for this insightful and very important subject. Firstly, the issue of ICE or the eviction of migrants from the United States or unregulated migrants from the United States is controversial even in the United States. Some people believe that, well, some of these guys support the economy by providing certain services, so maybe some domestic policy should be in place to regularize them. But the Republican Party, and especially the Trump administration that had campaigned on the back of what they call hostile migrants, would want to appease their support base or its support base. And so it's still going ahead to do it. But there are very controversial issues that has to do with the consent of migrants moving to a particular destination and whether their home countries or homes of origin would accept them. So the U.S. has resorted to intermediary states or states that become intermediaries, especially in Africa, where it has a lot of leverage and it has a lot of carrots to give if such states agree to such arrangement. And it looks like some states, including Liberia, Ghana, and others, have accepted to collaborate with the United States to ensure that these migrants are moved away from the United States of America.
Are we saying all this is legal? Is all of it legit? Because if it is, especially with what we've heard from Evelyn, there just seems to be a lot shrouded in secrecy, at least in the Liberia case. I mean, what do you make of it?
Yeah. So the legality is also in twofold. In the United States, Trump faced some legal pushback, but he was able to overcome some of them. And currently what is happening is more administrative and sometimes legal, depending on even the states, the individual states involved. But in the case of Africa, most of these countries, every agreement that a country enters with external actors like the United States would sometimes have to go through parliament. Sometimes it is administrative. And so in terms of these at the national levels, it's always different. But then you talk of international migration, and many international migration experts frown on how the methods that are being used is like forcefully removing people from one place and creating a transitional zone, which is these intermediary states, so they get to their final destination. Some have heavily condemned such actions. But then when it comes to the issue of migration, much of the decision depends on the country involved and not necessarily international organizations that are not sovereign. So on the legal aspect of it, that is succinctly how I'll put it. But then most of these countries that have agreed to work with the United States have history with the United States. It didn't just emerge. And sometimes it even has to do with how popular the US is in these countries. Liberia, Ghana are among the few countries in Africa that have their populations, respective populations, supporting the United States in terms of U.S. popularity in these countries. Ghana ranks above 60%, and I think in Liberia, it's also very high. And the reason is somewhat historical, somewhat political. Liberia, for instance, we know, was actually created by the United States under President Monroe in the early part of the 19th century, 1830s, 40s, thereabout, where eventually the territory was given some independence or had become independent. And so then that history with Liberia or that Liberia has with the United States has been very long-standing, and it is really playing out in this particular situation. The last time, or the first batch of African leaders that were posted in the White House after Trump had come back to office, included Liberia. Liberia was there, Senegal and others. And when the Liberian president started speaking with to Trump, he was actually surprised that the impeccable English President Johnson was speaking, and President Trump, known of him, had to even question him, how are you able to speak such English?
That was quite weird, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. The most important thing is that it has created some kind of closeness between Monrovia and Washington. And I believe that the Liberian president would want to keep that close relationship. In fact, this is the U.S. president is the kind of president, even countries like Japan, the European leaders, whenever they are in the White House, they tend to, should I say, pamper or to flatter him a lot. And so African countries that have relatively smaller economies would like to do more about that. Now, when you take Ghana, Ghana, even before independence, we had our first leader, Kwame Nkrumah, schooling in the United States. And in his African orientation, or his African idea of unity, he had adopted the U.S. system, the United States of Africa, and then transpositioned it to United States of, United States of America being United States of Africa, adopting such principles. And then eventually, he took a lot of economic support from the United States. I mean, writing directly to President Kennedy, getting a Kosovo Dam sponsorship, the creation of the Tema aluminum smelter, that is VAPO, and others, were all gotten from the United States. Despite disagreements and other things, it's still robust.
So history between some African countries and the U.S., that's clear. What is Ghana and Liberia getting from this that makes this a deal that also benefits these countries, aside the historical context of things?
Yeah. So, Eddie, we've had a number of interviews, and whenever you reach out to Fidel, we need to do this podcast, I look at the past. So the history is as important as the present, because then the relationship that you build over time is what crystallizes into what you are going to build in the future. So that is very critical. And then you are talking about the largest economy in the world having that relationship with him. So I was going to mention Guantanamo Bay too, when the current president had his first term. Of Ghana had his first term, he had to accept two Guantanamo Bay detainees. And that actually contributed somewhat to his defeat, his defeat in the 2016 elections, because many Ghanaians felt that he was bringing in terrorists. But actually, that was also as a result of the kind of good relationship that Ghana has had with the United States over time. And currently, this is not also different, that you want to continue that good relationship with the largest economy in the world.
Solid. I mean, 100%. Accurate what you're saying. So what are these countries getting so much that it becomes a good deal for them? Is it a good deal for these countries? Let's look at Ghana, Liberia, for example, as they are involved in all of this.
Yeah. So in recent times, Ghana has had military collaboration with the United States towards strengthening its military. It's received military equipment that is supporting its military, beefing it up. There are instances where Ghanaian servicemen have been trained in the United States and been given some skills that are very rare. The U.S. often gives such skills or gives such training to its closer allies. And these, if you put it in the context of the regional dynamics, the insecurity, the geopolitical shift, and others, then you realize that Ghana sees so much to gain, especially economic support and things like that. So in international relations, nothing goes for nothing. You always have to base on the pros and cons of everything. And Ghana, if you consider in Liberia, they don't see any cons or negatives of receiving migrants and, I mean, transitioning them to their final destinations. And in fact, the reason why some will not disembark from the plane is that some people find that, well, Liberia, they might have heard about Liberia, but it's relatively a poor country that may not be able to support their desires, because in the first place, they went to the U.S. for greener pastures, and when they were coming back, and if they have to be moved from there, they will want a relatively better country in terms of economic weight. Liberia is such a nice place, but I'm talking of the economic weight of the country. However, the US is not in the business of sending you to a place where you feel comfortable coming back to the United States. They want to make the situation as uncomfortable as it could. I mean, the discomfort is deliberately created for you to perhaps choose to go to your final destination.
And that's, I guess, where the human rights issue comes in, right? Because as you said earlier, with international law, that is not how it's supposed to be. Refugees are supposed to be welcomed in the first country that they go to. And this is exactly what human rights organizations are complaining about. Thank you very much, Fidel, for that. I'm going to come back to you, Evelyn, because I'm wondering how this is all playing out in Liberia. When you listen to the radio, social media, what's the public reaction?
Yes, so there are a lot of discussion right now in the country since the day the government announced the arrival of these people, even up to yesterday. So when you speak to civil society leaders, on the other hand, they will raise a lot of issues on the human rights aspect of that, the social economic implication, and even the issue about transparency in the process leading to the arrival of these people. So that is for civil society leaders. Some are saying social economically, Liberia does not have what it takes to host people who've already been in a society where they're used to access to all of the basic social services. Now bringing them to Liberia where there are a lot of social challenges in terms of services such as stable electricity, road network, and a whole lot. And then when you talk to the ordinary people, some of whom I spoke with, they said to me, well, if they were Liberians being deported from America and being brought to Liberia, that is totally 100% acceptable. So what becomes of the country as a state? So they're asking these questions in terms of benefits and the transparency around those.
Right. Thank you very much, Evelyn. And Fidel, that's, I guess, the challenge, isn't it? That there are those that also believe that countries can't say no to the U.S., right? And so from your experience, if let's say the U.S. came to Ghana again and said, hey, we want to give you guys, I don't know, 1,000 of the migrants and keep them for a bit. We'll give you this, we'll give you that. And let's say that it was not very popular in Ghana and many Ghanaians were against it. Could Ghana, for example, say no to the U.S.?
Yes, it also has a precedent. And recent times, the U.S. health bill that was proposed to many African countries. Surprisingly, Burkina Faso, that was seen as an anti-U.S. or anti-West government, actually accepted the health bill, but Ghana rejected it outrightly. And said that, well, our laws does not allow us to expose our health data to external actors or outsiders. So Ghana flatly rejected it. So it is not a matter of not saying no, but it's a matter of looking at the options that, well, this is a country that that is of strategic importance. So am I going to say no to everything they say? Should I, what do I consider? What is in my national interest? What will not hurt that much? And what is constructive? So these are the things that when you have a country you're closer to and there is a challenge, one of the things you do as a country, just as humans do with friends, is to offer help. But where that help is going, is not inherent to your benefit or it is not in your interest, you are honestly going to let your friend know that, well, this is not going to work. So it is not a matter of not saying or not being able to say no, because Nigeria said no to that deal. Other countries said no to this migrant thing because of how unpopular that is. Again, the political capital out of it, and as I said, if you check the demographics, the popularity of the United States in Ghana is very high. It's above 60%. In Liberia, it's the same, because, I mean, Liberia has a very strong diaspora population in the United States. And Ghana also same, and then the kind of relationship we've had over time. So all these things are weighed by the various administrations before they are able to come out to conclusion that, well, this, we can accept this and we cannot accept that. So it is not a matter of not being able to say no to the United States, but it's a matter of being constructive in that engagement.
So what happens now? Is this going to be the new normal? Is the U.S. just going to decide any time to bring migrants it doesn't want to other countries just because, you know, it has a lot of leverage in these countries, has a lot of money. Is this the new normal, you think?
I've always said that when Trump comes with a number of things, it also leaves with him. The next midterm elections in the US could even water down on these things, because the Democrats are not so, the Democrats dominated states are not so keen on this ICE or this forceful removal of migrants from these countries and putting them on planes and sending them to developing countries and all that. They are not so keen on it. So if, let's say, the Democrats win both houses, the Senate and the House of Representatives, we are likely to see some moderation in this, even with Trump in office, because he's going to be rendered a lame duck president because he will not have control in Congress. And that is, in the short term, could change some of these things, that the news, the headlines that we hear now could be less.
I like the way you put it, could be less. But also, let's not forget, it's not just the US doing this, right? It's somehow setting a roller coaster where other countries are finding it okay to also want to initiate. I mean, just what was it last year or so when the UK wanted to send some migrants to Rwanda? Of course, there was a lot of backlash and all. Other countries are definitely open to doing it. So again, is this really going to be the new normal around the world?
Yes, as like I said, I don't think so, because in the UK, example, for instance, it was outrightly cancelled. And now Rwanda is seeking even compensation for that, because according to Rwanda, it has invested a lot of money and it was a contract. And so if it is cancelled, compensation must be paid. So or damages must be paid. So, I mean, the fact that there was a backlash because it was a conservative government that started this. And then when the Labour came to office, it actually cancelled that outrightly. So this means that in each country, there's a pushback. So if I will not be in a position to call it a norm, because as long as in these countries that are implementing these policies, there is a lot of pushback. And in the case of the United Kingdom, it has been cancelled. It shows that similar things could be done in the US. And as I'm saying, if Trump is going to leave office or even in the midterm elections, we are likely to see some kind of watering down of this policy. Again, eventually, if Trump, the Republicans lose the elections, I see a reversal of most of these things, where sometimes of wholesale amnesty in immigration is given. We have seen that in the United States before. And again, this is not to say that the Trump administration was the only administration to have deported migrants, but it was done more humanely in the past, because under Obama, some migrants were deported, and under other administrations. So then it is how it is being done, how people are snatched from the street and they don't have any, space to defend themselves or to go through the migration process and all that. And that is what is problematic. But for this to be new norm, I doubt.
That sounds like a good way to wrap this up. There's just so many different aspects to sort of dig into, but we really have, I believe, looked at the overall gist of it. So I really appreciate the input from both of you. Fidel Amachi Owusu, political analyst and geopolitical expert, and our very own Evelyn Pade, correspondent in Monrovia, Liberia. Thanks a lot to you both.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Liberia isn't alone. The US has now struck deals with at least 35 countries and sent roughly 23,000 people to 26 of them since early last year. More than a dozen of those countries are in Africa. Liberia's government insists there's no quid pro quo, but the US is extending Liberian visitor visas from 12 to 36 months and has pledged $124 million in support. Sounds like quid pro quo to me. What do you think? Share your thoughts on Facebook and TikTok at DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe, and I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW Made
for minds.